You are listening to Mark Hatmaker Rough and Tumble Raconteur. This is a grab bag of old school Western martial arts, resurrected indigenous ways and empirical musings tinged with a heavy dose of respect, admiration, let's call it hero worship, for these hosses of yore. Hey crew, this is Mark Hatmaker here coming to you from the Comancheria. Today let's talk about eating. Let's talk about diet. Let's talk about, fueling our bodies for conditioning. And let's talk about it with a mix of history and some science and indigenous ways. This comes from, all of our unleaded conditioning. This is actually called this tip number 27. It's 27 of 75 from the dietary principles section. And again, unleaded conditioning is this an amalgam of old school combination man, physical culture tact. You know, physical culture is what was the early proto bodybuilding from in the 1800s right up to around 1920 something. And this is well before the heyday or even the advent of anabolic steroids, hell, even creatine. And also, you'll see there's an odd mixture of influence from just what they were finding. All these explorers were finding the so-called, now we're calling the Third World. At the time, people called it savage nations. That was the language at the time in indigenous cultures. So a lot of this has also an aspect of forgotten indigenous training practices. And all this is going to be shot through the prism of evolutionary medicine and ethology studies. And again, all this material here we're discussing here is from the historical record and the scientific record. And also right here in the Comanche, it's all tested and lived. I mean, I do this stuff to myself to find, hey, does this work? What shakes out, man? And again, at 58 years old, I'm going to tell you, I work far less to reap far more results. I wish I'd known this decades and decades ago, but I'm sharing with you here. On to the show. It's basically what we're talking about here is we can be kiboshing our weight loss. We can make weight loss more difficult. We can make our training gains far more difficult by becoming finicky eaters, in which we basically all have done that, and we'll show how much we've done that in recent history by just thinking we're looking for magic foods or avoiding magic, bad, no foods. So we need to start out by realizing that man is an omnivore, all right? And the dictionary supplies the following definition for omnivorous. It's of an animal or a person feeding on the food of both plant and animal origin. I didn't mean to insult your intelligence. I'm sure you already know this stuff. Now, one of the many reasons this species, that's me and you, Homo sapiens, has proliferated so easily up on the face of this planet is our astonishing adaptability. Man can be found in deserts, upon shores, tropical regions, mountain canopies, steppes, plains, deserts, polar regions, you name a terrestrial environment, and man has wandered there and found food to consume, all right? Now, if man were a niche eater, say only bamboo shoots, he would only be found in small clusters of populations there. So we would be like pandas. We would be like koala bears. We'd be incredibly specialized if we specialized to a mere one or two constituents of intake. And I'm talking, we're not just talking foods. We could talk about this species only eats carbs or protein only or fat only. Well, then, again, we would find decreased population saturation of this species, and then we would no longer be called omnivorous, but the science says this species is omnivorous. So the finicky eaters, among other hominid species that died out, well, they died out. They didn't survive. Well, why did they not survive? Because of aggressive pressures from this territorial animal. That's me and you, brother and sister. And also the finicky eater hypothesis that if you have a species niche diet, that's the only thing that you really survive on. Well, as that disappears, you disappear. But if you can take in more, you do. So the hardy, robust explorers of land and plate did. And that's me and you. That's our legacy. We are offsprings of that. We are supposedly hardy, robust explorers of land and the plate. Again, that is us. But we got to admit, we have turned our back on much of this omnivorous legacy that shaped the species for far, far longer than our current cultural quirks of the past 100 years or so. Consider this. This is from the book, it's a wonderful book by Robin Clark and Jeffrey Henley. It's called The Challenge of the Primitives. And again, that's their word, primitives. This is they were anthropologists, and at the time, they would use the word savage and primitives to refer to the individual. Savage, I know, sounds distasteful to ears, but whenever they transformed it over to primitives, it still sounds distasteful to ears, but it was considered a term of accuracy and perfection. And now let's go to that book, that quote we're discussing. Quote, the Kung Bushmen were found to know and have named some 200 different plant species, and more than 220 animal species of these 85 plants were eaten, 85, together with 54 different types of animals. Anyone who believes that primitive nutrition rarely ventures outside two or three stable species may find it interesting to calculate how many different animal and vegetable species go to make up his own diet. Unquote. So in other words, examine what we do in the grocery store. He'll go to a salad bar where we think, oh, we've got a lot of stuff sitting around there. We're talking, again, 85 different plant species together. Name 54 different types of animal. I'm thinking we're just doing fish, we're doing chicken, we're doing beef, we're doing pork. Boom, man, maybe turkey every Thanksgiving, then we're out. This is not how things used to be. Again, compare that wide variety of food types and sources to our own. Or the calories were high in all these different cultures we're looking at. And they were not just in protein, as the muddled so-called historians of keto diets would have us assume. Now, that's just, history is not history at all. It's just a silliness. Yes, protein consumption was high in these diets, and that's where a lot of people get on the bandwagon for the keto, but it was also incredibly high in carbohydrates and fat as well. Let's go back to the Challenge of the Primitives quote. During the same one-month period, 18 game animals were killed, which provided 454 pounds of edible meat. This, in turn, worked out to just over 9 ounces of uncooked meat per day per person, which yielded about 35 grams of animal protein per person per day. This is, if anything, slightly more than the average amount of meat protein eaten per day by the average American. It is three times more than the average amount of all animal protein, including fish and eggs, eaten by the people of the Third World at the present time. So, formerly, the diet was better. Back to the quote. The overall results of the study showed the average Bushman consuming 2,140 calories and 93.1 grams of protein a day. This protein figure is remarkably high and, according to records, is only exceeded by some half a dozen countries in the modern world, unquote. So, yes, protein consumption was high, but again, the inventory goes on to show so was all else. The key seemed to be how wide and variety, how wide everything was consumed. Now, that plant inventory, that crowed extract there, that falls in inventory of animals and plant foods. There were 75 kinds of animal protein, 50 plants, roots, and fungi also listed to be consumed by various hunter-gatherers, revealing that they, as a rule, eat far more variety than we do in our modern incarnation. It also demonstrates a wide strata of the three obsessions of present day, which, again, we think protein, carbohydrates, and fats. We think this by shuffling around these magic constituents, we're going to do something here. Confining to a class or avoidance of a class, well, this is a pseudoscientific form of the Finnick Eater principle. I'm going to give you another inventory of foods consumed by indigenous peoples made by George Gray. This is from 1841 during an Australian desert expedition. The variety of this inventory is typical of many other contemporaneous inventories of hunter-gatherer people pre-civilized infection. The constant in these inventories is the observation that labor to obtain the food is less than one would assume, also only 4 hours per week compared to our 40-hour work weeks usually. And we find no typical diet anywhere. Again, everywhere in the world, there's no typical, this is what they were doing, because they were, again, we were hunters, we were explorers, we were incredibly adaptable, we were omnivorous, anything and everything, and we found a way to make it work. So again, no typical diet anywhere you go, ergo there is zero compelling argument to be made for our forebears were practically vegan. Not true. Or our forebears ate paleo, just like me. Again, not true. That is short-sighted. You have to always zero in a tiny cultural quirk to find something to fit your hypothesis. And that's not how this worked at all. Adaptability, wide omnivorousness, this was the watchword. Again, let's go to George Gray, 1841. He's in the Australian Desert Expedition, and he's taking, the inventory of the animal foods, 6 sorts of kangaroo, 5 marsupials smaller than rabbits, 2 species of possums, 9 species of marsupial rats, mice, and dingoes, 1 type of whale, 2 types of seal, birds of every kind, including emu and wild turkey, 3 types of turtle, 11 kinds of frogs, 7 types of iguanas, 8 sorts of snakes, eggs of every species of bird and lizard, 29 kinds of fish, all saltwater shellfish except oysters, 4 kinds of freshwater shellfish, 4 kinds of grub. If we switch over to the plant foods, he also listed 29 kinds of root, 4 kinds of fruit, 2 species of cycad nuts, seeds of several leguminous plants, which again, we're talking legumes, we're talking beans, 2 kinds of mesembryanthemum, which is a flower. I had to look that up. 2 types of fungus, 4 types of gum, 2 types of manna, and flowers of several species of banksia. Again, incredibly wide variety. Hell, you know I'm not eating if I can't have to look it up or I can't even say it. Again, let's go to another quote from Challenge the Primitives. Quote, to a Western palate, most of the list above does not include food that we do not eat or probably would not force ourselves to do so. The eggs of lizards, the meat of marsupial mice, or any of the kinds of grub, frog, or snake. But so a lot of us hear this thinking, well, they're on survival rations and they're being forced to eat these sort of things because I turn my nose up at this and I wouldn't eat that. Let's go back to the quote here. But this is not a biological rule that can be determined even within the confines of modern Europe. The French do indeed eat the legs of frogs and the meat of snails, not through necessity, but as a result of gastronomic decision to regard such things as great delicacies. The Ifuego eat three species of dragonfly, the powdered flesh of locusts, crickets, flying ants, red ants, water bugs, and many kinds of beetle. In what sense are their taste for food to be judged less informed than our own, which incidentally includes the limited consumption of ants, coated at great expense, and chocolate? For us, milk is a staple food, yet in much of Asia, it is regarded as a mucus discharge just about as attractive as the secretions from the nasal orifice, unquote. So again, we're looking, often we'll look at these inventories of other foods and think, well, they had to do that. Not necessarily. A lot of it's just cultural affinities, finding ways to make things palatable. We're not around for whatever the recipe may be. My brother-in-law just came back from South Korea, where silkworms are a delicacy. We go, ooh, and over there they go, oh, man, you crazy? These things are amazing. But we would hear that and going, oh, were you guys on the show Survivor and you had to do it? No, that's just how things are. So we can't make assumptions about the menu when we see that and going, well, if they had good stuff at our supermarket, they'd be okay. No, the key is how widely the eating is. It's not just among the primitives that we find this finicky eater hypothesis silly. We see our early physical cultures, which is physical cultures with the forerunners of what we think of bodybuilders, except it's more in-depth than that, concerned with more than just the muscle. We're talking tendons and ligaments and joints, and crazy for posture and all particular movements. Going to dancing masters, not to necessarily learn to dance, but even how to pick up a fork properly, to walk properly, to take a turn around the neighborhood properly. The work, the training, the wise effort that fueled the omnivore is our legacy and our destiny. It has far less to do with the food. Expressed by another expression of how we are looking at things now by confining ourselves so much. This comes from, you can look at T Nation, sites on the internet, where you'll hear such things as, keto has done more to kill gains than anything else. It made people afraid of carbs, and carbs are one of the most anabolic substances. It's not just about energy. Carb intake increases several factors that promote muscle growth. That's mTOR and IGF-1 insulin, and decrease cortisol, which is catabolic. So we even have people within what we think, bro science, saying, again, you can't have this ballparking in a single constituent being incredibly finicky is not the way to do this. And by the way, catabolic means, this is working against us. Catabolic is muscle killing. And keep in mind, your heart is a muscle, brothers and sisters, all right? So we've got to avoid these things. We may indeed see, we may see results under a finicky eater regime. I mean, people think, well, I eat this way, I went keto and things were great. Or people say, hey, better train, I work this way. But often what's happening here, these results are more than likely in spite of or denial of our omnivorous approach. Because once we go off that, things go back up, or anything where you have a little bit of a diet and it works for a little bit. Actually, what's going on usually is there's a mindfulness. You're paying attention to what you're eating. You're paying attention to portion control. You think you're paying attention to simply, oh, I'm looking at the keto. I'm looking at this. I'm looking at this. Thing is, the act of observing and paying attention makes you more cognizant of what you're eating. If you probably took any diet, an omnivorous diet, for example, and really paid attention, you would see, hey, Al comes down to portion control. And then obviously you need to go back and put the work in on top of that. The same effort required to overcome the finicky diet would reap larger rewards under a wider regimen. And for those who are not putting in Herculean effort in the exercise and stuff and using a finicky eater program and thinking, well, why is this magic diet not working? Well, the magic diet is part of the problem. You got to do the work to get things done, and also don't think the magic diet is going to fix anything. Now, our goal as exploratory humans is to widen the palate, add variety to the plate, and get rid of dietary juju and all this effort we currently put into thinking about diet, nutrition, and supplementation, and put this into wise old school effort. Now, For more on this old school way to get the results historically accurate and backed by science, see our unleaded conditioning programs available at our store over at extremeselfprotection.com. Currently, we've got volumes available on the Pliant Physique, which is our head to toe. You can say it flexibility, but it's a little bit more than that. We got core stability, keep that back in line, hip stability. We got grips, fingers, forearms, the chest battery, back battery, shoulder battery, jolt battery, which is tendon ligament strength, warrior abs, warrior walking, the only cardio you ever really need. And I stand by that statement for reals. Upcoming volumes of shotgun muscle trifecta, strengthening the peripheral, shock muscle trifecta, ballistic motion for combat athletes, the Tarzan 12, feats to show off what you built, and complete batteries for the core, abdominal strength, rotational extension game changers, thigh, hips, knees, anterior, posterior, shoulders, biceps, triceps, man. I mean, it's just a lot of material that we're really trying to get this all together, put it into your hot hands as well, because this has done wonders for me. Wish I knew this decades ago. And if anything else, I hope you found this fascinating, this dip into history and to the science, and shoot it through today's bro science and go, in all ballparks in there, don't limit yourself in the dietary area. We got to make it our smarter focus on how we're moving, and then also would be wiser to go wider on our plate, because none of us are doing that. I mean, hell, I'm not even doing that. I mean, I don't know that I'm having 75 different types of vegetables, hell, in my lifetime, let alone in a given week. Anyway, take care of yourself, crew. Hope you found this fascinating. If you don't mind, like, support, share the podcast if you dug it. I'm told the algorithm gods smile on such things. Well, if you dig what we just discussed today, I'd like to invite you to like and subscribe to the podcast. Hell, support it if you want. I'm not your dad. Do what you want. And if you're a glutton for punishment, just visit our website, extremeselfprotection.com. You'll find links to the blog, all of our products, and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of more pages of like musings.